In the beginning, God created the heavens and the earth, from Genesis 1:1, is the foundational statement for the existence of all things. It is the only rational explanation of why things in this world actually exist at all. The universe, this world, and all the things that it contains, including us, can only be explained reasonably and logically with a creator, with God as our creator. Evolution is different from that, and it is something that is, it's one of those things that you can look at evolution and you can spend a lot of time trying to analyze all the specifics and reasons why that it is not logical, it's not reasonable, and we're going to do some of that in this study this morning. But we also need to take sometimes a humorous approach to it to kind of soften it a little bit. And if you'll bear with me, I found this on the internet. I think it's quite funny, and I hope you'll appreciate it as well. According to modern evolutionary theory, you are just an accident. You have no reason for being here. There is no meaning or purpose to your life. You're nothing but a meaningless conglomeration of molecules that came together purely by chance, billions and billions of years ago. All the dust and gas in the galaxy floated around for who knows how long until one day they bumped into each other and said, "Hey, let's be organic." So they became organic. They became little gooey, slimy things swimming around in the primordial soup. Then they grew little hands and feet and crawled up on the land. They grew fur and feathers and became higher forms of life. Then they became monkeys. And the monkeys became apes. And the apes decided to shave. And then they became what you are and I am today. As the guy said, from the goo to you by way of the zoo. That's exactly what evolution says. Now, as such, he continues, you have no real reason for being here. Your existence is pointless. The universe won't mind a bit when you die, because when you die, you just become compost. Now, let's talk about self-esteem, shall we? Try to give you some meaning. Welcome to the first sermon in our series titled, In the Beginning God, the Truth About Creation from Genesis 1 and 2. And that is what we're going to be studying over the next few Sundays. By the way, I announced last Sunday that I'm interrupting my series on 1 Timothy to do some studies on Genesis chapter 1 and 2 on creation, because that's what we're studying on Wednesday nights. And there's just so much information there that I don't want to spend 6 months in Genesis 1 and 2 in the Wednesday night class. And so what I decided to do was to share some of it, especially with those who are not on the Wednesday night class, so I could share it with everybody, including these young folks, that this information. And we're going to spend a few weeks here in Genesis 1 in the Sunday morning sermons. And we're going to try not to overlap too much and not to repeat what we do on Wednesday nights. So when we send out the audio of the Wednesday night class, you can listen to that to supplement. It's a supplementary process. We'll finish Genesis 1 and 2 in the Wednesday night class before we finish these sermons. So just wanted to explain why we're doing that. And while the opening, which was borrowed from the internet, is clearly a humorous approach to the whole creation versus evolution debate, it also exposes a serious fundamental flaw with Darwin's general theory of evolution. It is complete and utter nonsense. It's so irrational that humor is the easiest way to refute it, rather than trying to go into all the details and slog it out with the evolutionists on every little thing that they'll bring up. You'll be very humorous about it. And it opens the door to our sermon this morning, the premise of today's sermon, In the Beginning God, Why Creation Matters. And so we're going to have three sermons on why creation matters. Today is about logic and reason. Next week will be about morality. And then the next week will be about the biblical standpoint, from a biblical standpoint, why the Bible makes it clear that creation matters. Creation matters. And this is kind of the premise, if you want to make a premise of the study. Creation matters because it is the only logical explanation for us, for human existence. Nothing else will work. And so as we look at it from the rational standpoint this morning, we're going to do some logic and some evidences, but we're also going to kind of try to be a little humorous as we have here at the beginning. And there is benefit from studying the details, but don't get trapped by them. And that's why I'm saying don't get caught up in the details too much, because every time you argue or answer one thing, they'll have 1,000 more reasons why evolution is true and creation is a myth. And so you'll just get bogged down in the details. So try to take an irreverent approach to it, because it is illogical at its very core. And by the way, don't take yourself too seriously either. Don't get upset if, well, I don't know how to answer this. Don't panic. Don't get worried about that. They don't either. They're just making it up as they go along, so don't worry about being too serious. And in fact, as a result, do not let the evolutionist person who is trying to convince you of evolution get away with their pompous defenses and their high-sounding explanations of evolution as if they are the only intelligent people in the discussion. Don't let them get away with that. In fact, play with them if you can. Play with them and do this. Keep asking, from what? We did talk about this on Wednesday night. Keep asking them, from what? We evolved, okay. From what? Oh, monkeys. Okay, well, what did the monkeys evolve from? Lizards. Okay, well, what did the lizards evolve from? And just keep pushing back, because what they'll do is they'll present an endless regression of first things so that they don't, because they don't want you to go back to the beginning and show that they've got nothing. They have nothing at the entrance, at the beginning, because there is nothing in evolution at the very beginning. They deny that the universe is eternal. They recognize, they'll say the universe is not eternal. Science, and they'll say science proves that it's not eternal. Okay? Then why are you assuming that it is eternal? And just leaving that question unanswered completely. Strip away that endless regression and push it all the way back behind the Big Bang. Because the Big Bang Theory says that in the beginning, there was this ball of matter, and it exploded and became the universe that we see and live in today. Where did the ball of matter come from? Don't let them get away with it. Where did the ball of matter come from? And not only that, where did the energy to cause it to explode come from? They can't answer that question. In fact, what they're doing is, in fact, they recognize, you know what? When we push that, it actually kind of puts us in a position of kind of begging the existence of God, approving the existence of God. And we can't have that in their mind. They can't have that. No divine origin is not possible. And what they're going for now, and I almost put an article in the bulletin about it, beside it was too long, I didn't want to do it. They're going with the multiverse. Anybody watching the Dr. Seuss and all that? Not Dr. Seuss, not Dr. Who, but who's the doctor? Dr. Strange, taking in the multiverse. And so they're just throwing stuff against the wall, hoping something will stick. I don't care if it's Dr. Who, Dr. Seuss, or Dr. Strange. They're just throwing stuff against the wall, hoping we won't push them to, well, where did the multiverses come from? Nothing. That's what they have. Nothing. And so when you keep pushing that and you keep pressing that, you get to become the smart one in the room and throw out a Latin phrase. Here's a Latin phrase for you. Throw this one out at them. Ex nihilo, nihilo fit. Out of nothing, nothing comes. And they will have to agree with that. They can't disagree with it. They know that there has to be something for something else to exist. For anything to come into existence, there has to be something before it, and it's not matter, so it has to be God. That's the only rational thing. And they can't handle that. They can't have that. In fact, it's interesting. One person said, this is really probably the only area where just pretty much everybody agrees. Evolution, Science, logic, ancient myths, modern philosophy, and the Bible all agree on this basic premise that out of nothing, nothing comes. The problem is the only people who actually stand by it are Christians. The evolutionists claim it and then ignore it and pretend that out of nothing, something did come. They put their thumb on the scale to change the outcome. They're like Einstein. Now, Einstein, who realized, and by the way, I'm not an engineer, I'm not a physicist, I'm not a scientist, and so I'm not going to get into the details of this, but I've read some various discussions of this. And effectively, Einstein divided his theory of relativity by zero in order to make it work. But the problem is that you can't divide by zero. And so they call it the singularity. In other words, there's a singularity. In science terms, a singularity is an event that is so profound and so unique that there's nothing else like it ever in the whole history. And that their Big Bang was that, and they're giving up on that now. So the singularity, and that's zero, effectively dividing by zero, or, to be more realistic, dividing by God, recognizing God. And so what they say is basically, something divided by nothing equals everything. And that affirms actually the existence of God. All while they deny the possibility of a divine or supernatural origin. So creation matters because all other options are irrational. That's why the Bible says this in Psalm 14 and verse 1. The fool is the one who denies God. The fool has said in his heart, there is no God. Psalm 14:1 and 53:1. And so what the fool does, the evolutionist says, there is no God, therefore I've got to come up with anything that will fit in as the source of cause of creation except God, because there is no God, and so they make up nonsense. And state it profoundly and boldly and confidently, it's still nonsense. That's why Moses wasn't concerned about proving there is a God. Genesis assumes God exists. Moses isn't trying to prove God. He doesn't have to. Everybody knows God exists. That's why he says, in the beginning God created the heavens and the earth. It's also why believers by faith believe that God created the earth out of nothing. By faith, we understand, not we hope or we think. We understand, we know this, that the worlds were prepared by the Word of God so that what is seen was not made out of things which are visible. That's what we believe by faith. And that's why the world lives under the wrath of God. Open your Bible to Romans chapter 1. Romans chapter 1 and verses 18 through 22, if you will. I want to read from there because Paul, writing to the Roman church, explains why the unbelieving pagan world is under the wrath of God. Beginning of verse 18. For the wrath of God is revealed from heaven against all ungodliness and unrighteousness of men who suppress the truth in unrighteousness. So the first thing is, the wrath is revealed against men who suppress the truth. Evolution suppresses the truth. And so evolutionists are under the wrath of God. Verse 19, because that which is known about God is evident within them, for God made it evident to them. So in other words, God has made himself clear to mankind. Mankind cannot walk through this earth and say there is no God without blindly closing his eyes and her eyes to make sure that they don't see him. He's evident. It's clear. It's open and obvious to anyone who will look and see. Verse 20, he explains how. Verse 4, since the creation of the world, his invisible attributes. So we can't see these things, but we can know them, understand them. And what are those things? His eternal power. God created. That's power. Eternal means it existed before the thing that was created. And divine nature. That means he is separate from the material. It's not pantheism. God exists outside of the world that he created. Have been clearly seen. Being understood through the thing, what has been made, so that they are without excuse. So what he's saying is, nothing comes from nothing. Or ex nihilo, nihilo fit. Out of nothing, nothing comes. out of God, everything comes. And then he says they're without excuse. You can't say, well, I didn't know. Yes, you did. You just refused to accept it. In fact, he goes on in verse 21, for even though they knew God, they did not honor him as God or give thanks, but they became futile in their speculations and their foolish heart was darkened. Professing to be wise, they became fools. By the way, just kind of as a side note, anytime you start watching the news or watching what's going on in the world, and you think, what is wrong with these people? Professing to be wise, they became fools. Come back to Romans 1. Don't forget Romans 1. Well, let's spend the rest of our time this morning looking at some of the rational or irrational assumptions. So let's look at some of these arguments that they make. We're only going to do three of them, keep it fairly simple. And these are assumptions that they rely on that are irrational and cannot be explained by science or reason. And the first one is life from non-life. Life from non-life. Now, as we've already seen, something divided by nothing equals everything is illogical. It is impossible. It cannot be true. Except that's the basis of evolution. Something from nothing equals everything. And this violates the very basic concept of biology, all you medical professionals. Where does life come from? Does life come from non-life or from other life? Biogenesis is the phrase for it. Life comes from life. Life has to have some life to bring it into existence. You can't set a rock up instead of a microwave, you might have some life, you have some fire. But you can't set a rock up on top of the microwave and let it sit there for 40 years and then all of a sudden the rock just spontaneously becomes alive. Despite the Transformers movies, the rock just does not come to life. Life requires life to bring it into existence. Yet evolution believes that the first life is from non-life. You had that primordial goo, and there was this cell in there that was not alive, and then this lightning bolt came out of nowhere, zapped the goo, hit that little one cell, and boom, life now generated. How many of you have ever watched the Frankenstein movie? Okay. All right, so everybody's heard of Frankenstein. You know, when you think about it, Frankenstein was the doctor who created the monster. And so the idea there in that fantasy and that fiction book is that this dead thing was brought to life. But the thing is, the dead thing in the fiction and in the story was brought to life by the actions and work of a man who put it together and then connected it to the lightning bolt to generate life. So it didn't just happen. And everybody knows that's fiction. Even the evolutionists know that's fiction. But you know what? They believe that we are the descendants of Frankenstein's monster, that there was a nothing in the goo and a lightning bolt out of nowhere hit it and life came from it and then we evolved from that life. The absurdity is just oozing off every thought that comes from that idea. We know it's not possible. Culture assumes, the evolutionist culture assumes, that all descendants from that that all of us descended from that single cell that came to life by pure chance and accident. And they'll admit it's not possible today. They'll know, they'll tell you, okay, yeah, we can't replicate. That's your singularity. It only happened once. We have no evidence of it ever happening again. We can't reproduce it. We can't recreate it. We can't prove that it happened because we weren't there. No, nothing to record it was there. But we believe that's what happened billions and billions of years ago. Well, that's emotion. That's not reason. That's emotion. And then they accuse us of being foolish and having blind faith. We're not the ones wondering where we came from. They are, and they're the ones that are living by blind faith. All right, so that's the first one. First irrational assumption, that life came from non-life. And the second one is that information of life, or the information of life, grew from nothing. When we talk about the information of life, we're talking about basically about the DNA and about all of the rules and laws of nature that we all study and learn, and especially you engineers and you medical professionals really dig into and learn. All of that had to be in existence prior to or at the same time as the thing that is operated by it. Our full genetic code, our DNA, is necessary when life starts. So at conception, when every single one of us was conceived, at conception, every bit of DNA material and information was there in that first cell of life. Every bit of it. Information had to be there to make it work, to make it process. So everything that is necessary for us to grow from that single cell into the person that we are is already in our DNA, already there, encoded into. That information is there. Decades ago, I guess back when I was a kid, there was a scientist, who Carl Sagan, who was trying to search for extraterrestrial life and our extraterrestrial intelligence, SETI. And he was saying his idea was, if we could get out there and we could listen to the stars and we could hear, if we could just get one bit of coded information, like a simple SOS or something like that, from outer space, that would tell us there's intelligent life out there. The DNA of a single person in the first cell is more complex and more encoded than your computers. And it was all there, and it had to be there for us to actually function. I want you to think about this. Look around. And every bit of information that we need, every bit of information necessary for life had to precede life itself, which argues that God is the only source of that. For instance, bulletin. Anybody ever got a copy of the bulletin? If not, there's a good article in it. I didn't write it. That's why it's good. Anyway, that paper required information, the mind and action, and the mind and action of a person to make the paper. And it's a very simple thing. Lifeless thing, by the way. The information that went on it, that makes it a bulletin, had to come from someplace else before it could become a bulletin. The words didn't just appear on it by accident and by chance. Someone put it there. Somebody else wrote the article. I copied it off the internet and zapped and dropped it on there. It had to be there before there was a bulletin. Now, your cell phones. Everybody has a cell phone. All right, who does not have a cell phone other than kids? All right. Pretty much everybody has a cell phone. These things are phenomenal processing items. They have the information processors. It's incredible how much they can process. Now, the evolutionists will say, everybody knows that the bulletin paper and then the bulletin itself had to be made by somebody. And the information had to be there before it could be made. Everybody knows that a phone had to be created by somebody, made by somebody, and it processes information. Which, by the way, do you know how much that information on your computer weighs? Nothing, because it's intangible. Information is not, it's not made by it, it's stored by it. But anyway, we made those things. But you know what? The human brain, which is the most incomprehensible computer information processor, it just evolved from a single cell amoeba thing centuries ago, billions of years ago. That's just not rational. It's just not reasonable. Your brain and your spirit or your mind function as the most complex and intangible information processor ever seen. And not just that, but just take the laws of nature. Rob, who did the invitation Wednesday night, talked about the law of thermodynamics, and I'm not going to try to explain it again. I'm not an engineer. But did material and matter come together, and out of that the law of thermodynamics sprang? Or did the law of thermodynamics need to exist for that matter to work and do the things that it does? The information precedes it. But evolution says that information follows everything. That you start with a little bit of information and then it grows and expands from within itself. That is not rational. Ideas, information, thinking, rules, and laws are real but intangible processes which cannot be produced by matter. They had to come from a mind, and the only mind capable of producing those things is God's mind. So only creation provides a viable explanation for our existence, God's. Evolution has nothing but disintegrating declarations that fold like a house of cards when exposed to rational questions. So keep asking the question. Well, the third one is, irreducible complexity is reducible. Now what that means is that there are things that are so complex that you can't break them down into their individual parts that brought them into existence by chance, by accident. And in fact, Darwin, in his theory of evolution, he admitted that. He said this, if it could be demonstrated that any complex organ existed, organ would be a part of the body, like an eye, heart, ear, whatever. If it could be demonstrated that any complex organ existed, which could not possibly have been formed by numerous, that's irreducible, not possibly have been formed by numerous successive slight modifications over millions and billions of years, my theory would absolutely break down. Well, Darwin, your theory breaks down. It's not possible. The number of irreducibly complex items in the world is uncountable. And in fact, Darwin even went so far as to admit that the eye, the human eye, was his theory's greatest difficulty. But then proceeded as if he had overcome that difficulty with presumed small incremental evolutionary steps. So he couldn't prove it, but he just assumed it and said, just accept it. Blind faith again. And that was based on an incredibly simplistic concept of the eye. This is 1859, 170 years ago. His concept of the complexity of the human eye was pathetically small compared to today. Do you know that even the simplest eye spot, and we're not talking about a fully formed eye, but just an eye spot, just a portion of the cell that actually reacts to light in a single cell organism, is more complex than Darwin's simplistic view of the eye in 1859? Yeah, it's even more complex than an OLED TV, the newest one. By the way, I have to tell you this. I was in Sam's the other day with my wife, and we walked in, and I don't know if you go into Sam's much, but you walk in, and it's guy heaven right at the entrance. TVs! And I walked in, and there was an 85-inch TV. And I'm like, I think I was drooling a little bit. My wife got embarrassed and just walked away and pretended she didn't know me. This little tiny little speck of a part of a cell in a single cell organism is more complex than that OLED 85-inch OLED TV. But it just evolved. And then it evolved into our human eye with its millions and millions of nerves and cells today. Every single living cell is an irreducibly complex organization requiring creation. Every cell in your body required creator for it to exist. So does that make us an accident or something created by the mind and power of God? You know, there are a lot more we could go through. There are a lot more we could go through, but we're not going to go through them. So where did we go there? Oh. Creation matters because all other options are irrational. For us as believers, you know, those three things, those three arguments are great and they're useful, but all we need is Genesis 1:1 and Hebrews 11:3. Based on those two things, we believe in creation. The other things, these reasonable arguments that we've been presenting, they concur with Genesis 1 and the Hebrews 11:3. They don't prove it, they just concur with it. Divine creation matters because everything else is irrational. Well, next week we'll look at divine creation, why it matters, because without it, nothing matters. But for now, let's wrap up with just this invitation to become a Christian. And there's the plan of salvation, the things that you need to do. So here's a question I have this morning as we wrap up. If you believe in God, but have not repented of your sins, confessed Jesus as God's Son, and been baptized for the remission of sins, you're living in irrationality. Because this is what the divine Creator tells us to do to be saved. Or if you've done that in the past, but are living now in defiant sin, refusing to submit to the will of God, either specifically involved in sin or just specifically not caring enough about God to serve Him properly from the heart, you're living an irrational life. The God of reason, of logic, the Word calls us and says, come to me and I will give you rest. Come to me and I will give you meaning and purpose. God offers salvation and forgiveness and restoration to whosoever will come humbly to Him and penitently seek His grace. If that's you this morning, let us help you while we, please come while we stand and sing.